You, my friends, are listening to Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And next on the show, we're going to take a look at edible landscaping. And our guest is Rachel Belinda, founder of Daily Harvest Designs out of Madison. She's an experienced landscape designer and permaculture consultant. Rachel has a degree in horticulture and landscape design, has completed a permaculture design consultants course and herbalism and ecosystems apprenticeship program. So she's got a lot of background here. And as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. Have you added food plants to your landscape? What have you enjoyed about having food in your garden? What questions do you have about adding food plants? You can become part of the conversation right now, as a matter of fact. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Rachel Belinda, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much, Larry. It's great to be here.
You know, I took a look at your story, your background, and I thought, good grief, we could probably spend the whole hour talking about that. But tell us, you have a very interesting story about how you became interested in plants and garden design, and eventually your current business, Daily Harvest Designs. Tell us about your journey.
Well, I didn't grow up gardening, and it wasn't until I was in high school that I became interested in plants, and it was just by chance. I took a horticulture-based biology class in high school, and my teacher was great, and I just got really interested in plants. So after that, I decided to study horticulture and landscape design, so I went off to the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. And I really love the design aspect of it. So that's what I decided to get kind of my emphasis in. And after that, I started a small company in Minneapolis, which was really fun. I did garden design, installation, and maintenance. But after a few years, I was kind of like wondering if there was more I could do. I mean, I really loved the gardening work, but I wanted to make a difference in the world. So I started thinking about food plants and just wondering if I could swap out some of those ornamental trees and shrubs with fruiting bushes and fruit trees. And I had no idea about growing food plants at all. So I thought about that quite a bit, but then I also had this dream of joining the Peace Corps. So
off to the Peace Corps.
Off to the Peace Corps I went.
But that gave you some good, I mean, you learned a lot in that as well.
Yes, I did. It was a break from gardening, but I learned a lot of really good life lessons. And I just think it's so beneficial for anyone to get out of the country and see something completely different and experience a different kind of lifestyle. But when I was in the Peace Corps, I happened to find a book about permaculture design. So I read that book while I was, hanging out in my little mud brick house and decided I wanted to study that some more when I got home. So that's what I did. I moved to Portland, Oregon. And I lived there for about 8.5 years, and I studied permaculture design and herbal medicine, and I started my current business in 2012 when I was still in Portland.
And here you are now in Madison.
Here I am now, back in my home state of Wisconsin. I've been here about 8 years or so.
Yeah, actually, you're living in Mount Horeb, but
yep.
I'm sure you deal with people from all over this area, at least.
Yes, yep. I work locally and virtually for designs. For design work.
So what's your definition of edible landscaping?
Let's see. For me, it's a combination of like growing food in a really beautiful and functional way. So kind of taking those ornamental landscape design principles that I learned in college and combining them with the permaculture principles that I learned in the permaculture class I took, and creating a really beautiful and functional landscape where you can grow food and medicine.
It's really pretty cool. And maybe expanding on that through your business and what do you do with Daily Harvest Designs?
Yep. So when I first started with Daily Harvest Designs, I was just offering landscape design consultations and design services. So I still do that now, both locally and virtually. So I'll work with clients in all different states. But I'm also starting to create different products for people to download from my website. So it's kind of a lower price point and maybe more specific to just certain areas of a project. And I also, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I have a workshop coming up and, yeah.
Is that an online or is that an in-person?
No, that's an in-person.
That's an in-person
yeah.
one. Well, part of your mission is to seek solutions that require the least change for the greatest effect is what I think I remember reading. Could you expand on that?
That's one of the big permaculture ideas is to try to just work with the environment and the landscape as it is and make the most out of that. So rather than making large changes and completely restructuring the landscape, I like to look at what's happening already. Like, where is the water flowing in the property? How can we maximize that and use that to our benefit in the landscape? And then, you know, with that, I would play off of the water flow to create the design for the flow and function of the space, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And let's talk more about permaculture, because probably everybody listening or a lot of people listening will have some idea about permaculture itself. But it's certainly becoming popular as a concept. But again, talk more about what it means to you.
Let's see what it means to me. It's like a whole system design, basically. So permaculture doesn't have to just apply to gardens. It can apply to anything, like the way you arrange your home or your business. But it's basically taking a look at the bigger picture and figuring out how all the pieces can work together in a way that's going to function most efficiently and in a way that it will support all the pieces.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're talking about supporting all the pieces, I was online looking at different areas where permaculture is applied, seems to be applied pretty much all over the world. I even noticed in Egypt, they took a desert area and made a permaculture out of a piece of the desert, and were having really good success with it.
That's great.
Yeah, it's so there's a lot about it that I think is really intriguing. And when you're talking about edible plants in that landscape, what are the primary ones that you're typically dealing with clients, folks who might be listening today?
I deal a lot with like fruit trees and berry bushes. So basically bringing in the perennial food sources. So I'm looking less at the annual gardens, which the annual vegetable gardens are great, and that's definitely a part of it. But ideally, if we can bring in more perennial-based foods that are going to come back year after year, that's a really easy food source, right? Because you don't have to do too much for it. Plus, then you can build structure into your landscape and your garden. So you get the layered garden look like you would in an ornamental garden. Just, you know, you've got your trees and your shrubs, and it's not just a blank space that where there's nothing happening in the winter. You get seasonal interest as well.
Yeah. And it's, well, it's not a forest setting, but it's certainly a much more varied setting in terms of height and width and everything else.
Yep, exactly. And a lot of those edible plants are just really beautiful. So you can use them as like focal plants in a landscape, and they can really function as a lot of the ornamental plants would, but you're also getting that benefit of food in your garden as well.
Yeah, and they smell pretty good in the spring, too, when the flowers.
Yes.
So you're getting all of the senses. Well, let's take a call. Andy and Madison will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Andy. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. When I moved in my house, it had, like, natural prairie landscaping in front, and I really couldn't tell the difference between the prairie grasses and weeds, and wound up pulling a lot of them out. So there was a very kind of enclosed area by the driveway in concrete where I planted mints. And then in the other areas, I planted chives, garlic chives, and bell flowers, which is like a Korean delicacy. And those are all thriving. And the garlic chives are pretty much taking over my lawn now. So whenever I mow the grass, it smells like onions.
Andy, thanks for calling. Rachel, you want to comment on Andy?
Yeah, it sounds like you picked great plants for that spot so they can grow wild and be happy but not spread too much, you know, aside from the garlic chives.
Yeah, well, aside from the garlic, and he did put the mint in an enclosed area,
yes.
Which is probably pretty. So would any of those be part of any landscaping that you would be doing?
Yes, for sure. And that would be, you know, like the ground level plants. So like when I work with clients and figure out the structure and the flow and the function of the landscape, I start with the shapes and then the trees and the shrubs. And then, of course, like all those smaller plants get filled in to the landscape as well.
Rachel Belinda, our guest today, founder of Daily Harvest Designs. And if you'd like to join in, maybe you have a question. Maybe it just relates to a particular fruit tree that you have or other plant that's in the edible area. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Great to have you with us for Garden Talk here on WPR News, taking a look at edible landscapes today with our guest Rachel Belinda. I mispronounced your name. Sorry for that.
That's okay. It happens all the time.
Rachel Belinda is founder of Daily Harvest Designs. She's an experienced landscape designer and permaculture consultant and works a lot in edible landscapes. Questions for her, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@WPR.org. What are your thoughts on soil amendments? You go to somebody's place and you're looking at the soil and examining it or whatever. Do you often get involved in amending soil that's already there?
Sort of. It seems like a lot of my clients are starting with lawn as their base.
Okay.
So the question is, like, what do we do? How do we get rid of this lawn? So what I often like to encourage people to do is sheet mulch. So you basically lay down cardboard, a couple layers of cardboard, make sure to take off all the tape and the staples and things like that, and then pile on organic matter on top of that. And then that's going to smother the grass, and it's going to create a really awesome soil over time. So that's typically what I would just recommend, you know, to start with a nice base like that. Otherwise, compost is fantastic, and that's always my go-to, and make sure to keep your soil mulched.
Andrea in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Andrea.
Hi. Oh, I didn't have a question. I just wanted to recommend that people check out currants for their edible landscaping. There's no brighter shade of red than the red currant berries, and they produce in partial shade, which is really nice. And also, don't forget about our native currants. There's a clove currant, and the reason why it's called clove currant is that the flowers, which are yellow and are produced in the spring, very, very early, smell delightfully of cloves and cinnamon. It's really, really nice. They produce dark berries later in the summer, unlike the European black currants, they're not foxy. You can eat them right out of hand. So those are two of my faves.
Hey, Andrea, thanks so much. Well, comment on Rachel on what Andrea is suggesting.
Yes, currants are fantastic. I often recommend currants for clients as well. They're a really nice landscape plant. So they look good. They produce really well. And you can also get white and pink producing currants as well. So, and they all have very different flavors. They're great for jams and jellies. Sometimes I like to turn the berries into juice and make candies for my kids or fruit leather or jelly. But yeah, the plants themselves are great, and they tend to kind of like layer. So, you know, a branch will come down and it will reroot in the soil. So if you have a slope or a place with some erosion, that can be a good choice as well.
Sounds good. And those flowers that Andrea were mentioning would come really early in the spring, which is also a good thing for our pollinators.
Yep, definitely.
There's not a lot of early flowering in the spring.
Yep.
In Madison or pretty much any place else in Wisconsin, I think.
Yep.
And native plants, do you use a lot of natives? And if so, what native plants might you use in your work with homeowners?
Yeah, I do use native plants, and typically I use those in places where we don't want to grow food or can't grow food for some reason, like along the streets, kind of in the boulevard areas, or rain gardens, or places where there's a lot of traffic and dogs walking by. That's always great for native plants, and then any of the flowering natives are fantastic. The coneflowers and asters, grasses, you name it.
Yeah, I was thinking about my own, between the sidewalk and the street area, that's yep. exactly what I have in front of my home.
Yep, that's a great solution for that place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Christina. Again, Andrea, thank you very much for your comments. Christina in Glenwood City will give you a chance. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you. Your guest mentioned medicinal plantings, and I'm hoping she can expand on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, a lot of the plants that you might already have in your garden are medicinal. So if you're growing elderberries, for example, that's a really well-known medicinal plant. There's also plants like yarrow, which can be great for reducing fevers and stopping bleeding for cuts. There's weeds that are medicinal, like dandelions and plantain.
What do dandelions do?
they can be really helpful for your kidneys and liver, depending on which part you use.
Oh, so you can use the leaves or the flower itself?
Yep, or the root. Yeah, you can make a tincture out of the root. You can eat the leaves. You can make some dandelion flower fritters, which are fantastic. So when the dandelion flowers are wide open, you can batter them and fry them, and they're such a treat. We eat them every year.
Oh, what do you use for batter? This is off the top, yeah. topic a little bit, but
I think it's all related. My digestive system likes gluten-free, so I do like a gluten-free one-to-one type flour and eggs and milk, I want to say. It's, you know, been almost a year since I made them, so.
Christina, there you go. Thank you very much. So this is something you point out to clients as you're dealing with them?
Yep. Yeah. And some clients, they really want a medicinal garden. There was a woman who I worked with in Virginia, and she wanted a huge medicinal garden. So I helped her find places for a wide variety of medicinal plants in her garden. And I have a client in Madison right now, and that's their focus as well. So a lot of their garden is going to be medicinal plants, as well as food growing as well.
So Christina or somebody like her, you definitely sounds like you could help them out in that area.
Yeah, for sure.
Rosemary from Lodi called to ask for some edible perennials that deer might leave alone.
Oh, that's always such a tough one. I should get a good list on my website. The deer issue. I don't know if I can tell you off the top of my head what they will leave alone. I know that I just tend to plant more than I need. And anything that you don't want the deer to eat, maybe keep closer to your house. And then, of course, if you can fence off some areas, that's helpful as well.
I remember looking at another email. Could you give an example of a challenging place that you worked on and kind of the result or what you did? An example. You don't have to name where you were, but you can
Let's see. Well, challenging in what way? Because there are
all
sorts
of
different
challenges. There's a lot of different ways. So pick your own challenge and go from there.
Let's see. Can I think on that and come back to it?
you sure can. I'm going to make you come back
to
it.
Yes, that's fine.
What ideas do you have for people who want to replace some of that lawn? Where do they start?
Definitely start closer to your house if you're looking to grow food plants. Because, I mean, if you have your food close to your house where you see it and you walk past it, you're going to be more likely to harvest it and notice what's going on with it. So that's a good place. If you already have some garden beds, you can expand on those. So perhaps your ornamental landscape becomes kind of the backdrop for your edible landscape. So you can just widen your beds by taking out some of that grass and shifting your bed lines and start growing some edible and medicinal plants in front of those, if that makes sense.
What do we need to know about growing food in pots? Do you incorporate that sort of thing into your design work?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. People like to grow food in all different places, and you know, some people don't have a lot of in-ground space. So pots are great, but just make sure to keep them watered well. I would say look into an automatic watering system. At least for me, I know that's been helpful, because if I'm going to forget anything, it's my pots, and they really need that attention.
What planting mediums do you recommend, typically?
I just do like a organic blend with compost mixed in.
Yeah, so you're not going to use, you typically don't use commercial fertilizer then.
Correct.
Yeah.
I just go for anything organic if I'm going to be growing food.
And what about raised beds? They're certainly another great way to add food plants, I know. Mm-hmm. How do you use them in landscape design?
They fit into the bigger landscape. Let's see, how to describe it without being able to draw something. you have your like trees, fruit trees and berry bushes and, you know, ideally some nice flowing bed lines, but then you can also have your raised beds. So depending on the space, it can be its own separate area, or you can kind of mix it in with the rest.
So
that's not very specific, but...
fruit trees have come up pretty often, pretty traditional elements in gardens. What are some of your favorite varieties that you like to recommend?
Ooh, I love the contender peach tree. It's so good. We've had huge harvests of peaches at our house with no pests or disease issues at all on just a really small peach tree that's maybe 6 to 8 feet tall, 8 to 10 feet wide. That's done really well.
And what's the name again? Because people are going to say, which one did she say?
Contender.
Contender.
Yes. And then the Reliance peach is also a cold hardy peach tree.
And the Reliance.
And the Reliance.
So those are two you recommend. Karen in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Karen.
Hi. First of all, I have to say that my nephews and nieces call me Eeyore, so my comment is about, I've heard talk about bellflowers, mustard, dandelions. How do you keep control of that so that your neighbors aren't unhappy? Because like one of my neighbors, quote unquote, planted bellflowers and then threw a pile of them across the street on the terrace, which is for plantings, and that's taken over, and it's really hard to get rid of. As a matter of fact, I just don't know how. But in any case, some things are invasive, like garlic mustard, and, you know, yeah, it's not lawn, but, you know, your neighbors won't be too happy if you have. So that's all.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Karen. So what about that?
Yes, very good point. There are certain things that I wouldn't go out of my way to plant, like the invasive type things. Bellflower is really hard to get rid of. So I would say just if you have it already, harvest it. Try to catch things before they go to seed, or bellflower will spread underground. So that's a tricky one.
Yeah, that's a tough one without chemicals, if you want to. Do you use many chemicals yourself in work?
No. Nope, I don't use any myself.
Okay, so when you're working with somebody, it's going to be an organic, quote-unquote organic kind of an approach.
Yes, ideally.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, diseases and pests can wreck a fruit crop pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with disease pests?
I mostly just plant more than I need, at least in my home garden. So, you know, every year is different. And some years I'll have a huge crop of peaches and some years huge crop of apples. And I just kind of go with the flow and just know that, you know, sometimes things aren't going to produce well and maybe something won't make it. So I'm kind of a tough love gardener.
David in Shorewood emailed to ask for recommendations for edible plants that can work in the shade.
Mm-hmm.
Violets grow pretty well in that area right now. It's between two apartment buildings.
Okay, yeah, violets are fantastic. Stinging nettle, which is another one that people may or may not want to plant, but that's a fantastic shade-loving plant that's edible. I have some black cap raspberries growing in the shade, another kind of weedy wild one. Let's see.
Good example there. And the virtual part of this, Jill wonders, virtual garden coaching you do.
Mm-hmm.
What can we find out virtually and what limitations are there to that type of a coaching session?
Yeah, there's a lot that we can do virtually, especially with just the technology and being able to get a pretty decent overview online from like Google Earth Pro. And then just with photos and video walkthroughs and talking to people, I'm able to help them quite a bit come up with either, you know, a full design if that's what someone wants, or for the coaching just to help answer questions or figure out, you know, how to reshape a bed and make your whole space flow together more, things like that.
So I suppose in a virtual, somebody could have photos or just take their computer outside, just point the camera
exactly
at a particular area. Do you do quite a bit of that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that sort of help exists. And I went on your website, and it's a pretty website. And
Thanks. You
have a number of downloads.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about what you've got for downloads.
Well, I have a few free downloads. So if you're just looking for some info, honestly, I'm trying to remember what's up there right now. I think there's like a fruit tree or there's a plant list kind of download. So I have those. I have some designs that are kind of ready to go. And I'm coming up with some plant palettes, which are like collections of plants that will grow well together in specific areas with different themes. So that's in the works. I have a DIY design workbook. So if you're looking to do your own design, it walks you through. It's pretty basic, but it's fun. It's kind of like a cut and paste.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You can like literally cut out the plant icons once you kind of figure out your base map and whatnot. So
John in Appleton has something. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Yes, hi. Every year when I grow zucchinis, I get vine borers. Is there anything I can do to prevent those?
Any ideas on that one, Rachel?
I am not sure. I've got to say the pest part of it is not my forte. I think I took plant. Yeah.
Can't help you out there, but maybe, John, maybe somebody else will have some ideas about preventing borers in zucchini squash. So stay listening, and we'll get somebody on. The number, by the way, is 800-642-1234 if you have a question or comment, or maybe you can help John out with his borers. 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@wpr.org. Mona in Appleton has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Mona.
Hi, I have a weeping willow. It's like a dwarf weeping pussyhole tree that I planted last year. And I'm concerned that the rabbits are going to just chew the branches all the way up. And I'm wondering if using, I don't use pesticides and stuff. I've got cayenne pepper, and I did sort of a little perimeter around it a ways out. I don't know if it would hurt the tree if I sprayed it on, or if it leached into the ground. Would that be a problem for the tree?
That's a good question. I would give it a try. You could also just try fencing your tree. That would probably be my go-to, just to try first. And if you're concerned about the cayenne, you can also buy like an animal deterrent spray or like granules that you can shake around as well. And I have used those. There are organic options, and I use those in my yard, and they seem to work pretty well.
Yeah. All right. There you go, Mona. Thanks for calling. You mentioned, here we got an email from Lois. She mentions, wants to know how skilled a gardener she needs to be to take the self-paced online course that you have.
Oh, you don't need any skill whatsoever. So the online course is for designing your garden. So you don't need any skill. And I basically walk you through the exact steps that I use when I design someone's landscape.
Michael and Terry in Nelson, New Zealand, emailed from New Zealand to say they often struggle knowing where to start and end up planting with not much of a plan. It doesn't always have the best results a few years later. They are interested, they're in a process of clearing pest plant areas, area by area, and they're having a planting plan. Would that help us save later on? They've run into crowding problems with previous projects, and it's hard to cull the trees you planted a couple of years ago. Do you have any suggestions for working up a plan?
Yes, I would say you definitely need a plan. And that's probably one of the biggest things that are the biggest struggles that my clients have is, you know, they tried something and it didn't work. The plant spacing was wrong. And what do they do now? So plans are super important because they can save you all sorts of time and money and frustration. And what was the second part of that?
Suggestions for working up a plan.
Oh, yeah, suggestions for working up a plan. So I like to start by just looking at the big picture and figuring out, you know, what's going on in your site, where, if there are any views you want to block, where the water is flowing, how it's flowing. Just have a really good sense of your property overall, and then figure out what you want in your property and just start chunking it down from there. If that makes sense.
Yeah. And of course, if you're in a city situation, you got to think about the neighbors too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What are their trees and so forth? And what else do they have growing on their side?
What's on their side of the fence? Any bellflower?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Summer in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. We'll go to you now. Hi, Summer.
Hi. I was wondering if there are any recommendations for fruit trees that can handle less sun. We don't have a lot of sun in our backyard, only our front yard.
Yeah, so the backyard is where Summer wants to put a fruit tree, and wondering what fruit trees might work best when you've got a shade, kind of shady area.
Yeah, I would definitely check out elderberries. They grow just fine in a shadier area. You could try quince trees as well. Currants, those are shrubs. So yeah. I'm moving into the shrubs, and viburnums, which are also shrubs, but they can get pretty big as well.
Yeah. Quince.
Oh, and another one, pawpaw trees.
Yeah. And how big do they get typically?
The pawpaws, they get pretty big, like I want to say 15 feet tall or so, maybe larger. Oh, and American persimmons. Those are quite large, maybe 25 to 35 feet in height, I believe. But that's another one.
And they'll take shade.
Yep, they'll take some shade.
And they'll be creating it.
Yeah, and they'll be creating more.
And you'll be getting some sour fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Summer, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Rachel Bolita, our guest today, founder of Daily Harvest Designs. She's an experienced landscape designer and permaculture consultant. Questions for her, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News and Garden Talk. I want to thank everybody who donated during our one-day member drive. Is it a one-day winter member drive? And a lot of support from people like Leonard in Kenosha, Camilla in Milwaukee, Dennis in Lake Delton. All kinds of people make our WPR essential service possible. If you missed the member drive, there's still time to join in. You can put your gift at WPR.org. You play a really important role in keeping Wisconsin informed, inspired, and connected, and thank you very much for your partnership. As we visit with Rachel Bolita, who is founder of Daily Harvest Design, and taking a look at edible landscapes with her, and great to have you listening in. And you can join us at 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. Sharon in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I have probably about an 8-foot by 4-foot bed of lilies of the valley in my backyard that don't blossom at all anymore, and I'd really like to get rid of them and replace them with something else. I've tried a little digging, but I'm wondering if that's the best way to do it.
I would say yes. I would probably try to dig for the lily of the valley. That would be my recommendation.
Would you, another approach might be one you mentioned earlier with cardboard and so forth.
Yep, sheet mulching.
So what would you do there? Mow it down?
Yeah, you could mow it down and then just sheet mulch. And make sure to put like 4 to 6 inches or so of wood chips on top, because you really want to make sure that you're keeping the light out, so blocking all that light.
But put a layer of cardboard down first.
Oh, yes. Yep.
And then the wood chips on top.
Yep.
Or anything else that you might want to use, I suppose. You could probably use pretty much anything as long as it was thick enough.
Yeah, as long as it's thick enough. And that and make sure it's a natural material.
Yeah. All right. Sharon, there you go. A couple of either dig it out or cover it up. those are the two for Lily of the Valley. Linda in Appleton. Hi.
Hi, thanks for your call, for your program today. Enjoying it very much. I have a very mature emerald ash, and that is probably going to have to come down in the next few years. Huge. It's like 30 years old. And do you have any suggestions for replacement shade trees that are not messy?
Okay, so shade tree that would replace that ash and may not be messy and is not messy.
Are you wanting something edible?
No, not necessarily.
Okay. I don't know. You could go with the good old maple tree.
Maples would work well. If you were doing an edible one, what would you do? Of course, that could create a mess, but some that wouldn't?
An edible one that wouldn't create a mess?
Yeah.
I don't know if it exists.
Well, there are some where the birds will get them before you even have a chance.
But. Yeah. I mean, like serviceberry, that would be one that, I mean, it's not going to be as large, but that could be an edible tree that wouldn't be too messy. The persimmon would be another edible one. Any of the walnuts. I know that some people really don't like black walnuts, but I love them because we tap them for the sap and make really delicious syrup. So that's another big shade tree, but that can be messy as well.
Yeah, and it can create problems for other plants.
Yep, exactly.
Linda, there you go. Thank you for calling. Christy in Reeseville, your turn. Hi, Christy.
Hi, yeah. I haven't started anything yet, and I want to get into some, like, blueberries or vegetables, like squashes and watermelons and stuff like that. And it's a blank slate, just grass right now.
Yeah. So how does Christy start?
Start small. So if you're brand new to gardening, I wouldn't go all out and convert your entire yard right away because, you know, it's going to take some time to get used to sort of the gardening and edible landscape lifestyle because although perennial food plants are less maintenance, you know, you still need to go out and harvest and figure out what to do with them. So there, I would say there is a decent learning curve. So start with some annual plants, start with some herbs this year. If you wanted, you could add a blueberry bush or another alternative is honeyberries. And I really like honeyberries because they're easier to grow than blueberries. They're very early to fruit, like at the end of May or so, they're usually ripe.
Yeah, they're very good. And blueberries, you know, for the kind of soil we have, this basic soil, sometimes it's almost better, I think, to have rather than having to amend the soil every year to maybe put them in a planter.
Yep, yep.
Because then you can, it's a lot easier to amend the soil to the proper acidity that really makes the blueberries go great.
Yep,
but the honeyberries are a really good idea, and they seem to be have gained in popularity over the years.
Yeah, I think so too. And they're a really nice landscape plant. They're well behaved. They look nice. The branching pattern is really interesting. So they have a good, like, winter interest to them as well.
Yeah, yeah. Christy, there you go. Thank you. Jay and Franklin will go to you. Hi, Jay.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
About the squash, if you take medicine bottles, and when the squash are just emerging from the seeds, or you can fold down the leaves, get a medicine bottle on the very root because the moths seem to go at the bottom of the root or at the bottom of the stem, and that seems to work pretty darn good.
So for the vine borer that you were talking about, you need to put something to prevent the moths from, you know, getting in there.
The plant, they go at the, I heard this probably on your show years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Jay, thank you so much. Appreciate that call. I knew somebody'd call in. Jen in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi, Jen.
Hi. Yeah, I'm wondering, I live in town in Madison, and so I'm interested in creating a privacy screening or a hedgerow using some native shrubs and some edible species. And so I'm first wondering which species you would recommend to do that with, and then also what type of spacing I would need in order to get that density level.
Well, let's see, some good plants for a hedgerow. If you're not wanting it to be too tall, I would go with like elderberries and some hazelnuts. If you want some prickliness to it, you could add in some gooseberries. Let's see, some smaller fruit trees. So any of the dwarf fruit trees that you would like. And then if you want it to be really dense, I would just look at the mature width of the plant on the tag and then plant a little bit closer than what you normally would. So if a plant is 10 feet wide, you would want to leave 5 feet of space on either side of the base of the plant, right? But if you want it to be more dense, you know, maybe you leave 4 feet of space instead.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Jen, there you go. Casey in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Casey.
Hi. Yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it. My wife and I have recently celebrated a wedding anniversary, and it was our wood gift, and we are also first-time homeowners. I've been hoping for a long time. I know that she wants to get into gardening and whatnot, and I thought a fun gift would be an apple tree, something, you know, we eat apples all the time. It's something that I think that we really use, but also it has that extra element of it fits the wood theme. And as I was doing a little bit of research, I also found out that in order to blossom or to give fruit, you actually have to have a second tree. And I thought, well, gosh, that's just too darn romantic. and all the more perfect for the whole theme that, you know, it's not just one, but to get two. And, you know, I thought that was a fun thing. I'm a very novice, you know, guy when it comes to all this. And I just was trying to get a sense of, in terms of good times of the year to plant, particularly. I'm not a Wisconsin native. My wife is. You know, good times of the year that I might plant. I know I'm not anticipating fruit within a few years or anything like that, but it was just something I wanted to start off on the right foot. And
sure,
you know, in terms of all those considerations.
And you're in Appleton.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. For fruit trees, I definitely like to plant them in the spring because that gives them a year, you know, a season to kind of get established. You could also plant in the fall, but if I have the choice, I definitely lean toward the spring.
And then in terms of apple trees, I mean, there are some dwarf trees that, you know, depending on how much space Casey's got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would say think about what type of apple you like or what you would like to do with the apples. If you're going to eat them fresh, if you're going to bake with them or make sauce, and then start narrowing it down from there. And just double check that you get the two apple trees that are going to work well together for pollination. So you can ask at the nursery when you go to shop.
So you wouldn't necessarily have the same variety? You wouldn't have to have both the same variety? Sometimes you would.
Fruit trees, I would say no.
No? Okay.
Typically different, but it really depends. And I don't know all the details off the top of my head because some plants, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't.
Casey, if you and your wife have different, if you like different apples, let's put it that way, different kinds of species of apples, it might be possible to have a couple of apples that are that will, you know, work okay together, mm-hmm. but you'll get two different fruits.
Yep. Or you could get a little crazy and get an apple tree that has several different varieties of fruit grafted onto it. So it's like a 3-in-1 apple tree. So if you get like two different 3-in-1 apple trees, you'll get 6 different types of apples.
Oh, my gosh, you're blowing his mind now.
I know.
a couple of 2 3-in-1s. What do you think of that, Casey?
I think that you're the correct phrase was blowing my mind. Didn't know that was even a possibility.
There you go. You've got your opportunity there, Casey. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, 3-in-1s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to do that with the. It's a good solution for urban properties, actually, especially if you need to have two fruit trees for pollination and you don't have the space. Just pick something that you can have it a 2-in-1 or a 3-in-1.
Yeah, and so here you are with your business, Daily Harvest Designs. You'll meet in person with people, but you also offer video. Conferencing and even some video classes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So there's lots going on and a lot of different ways they can use your materials.
Yes, definitely. I try to just have a variety of different ways for people to get support because everyone's in a different spot with their garden.
And just to end it, Sharon in Dodgeville emailed, she successfully deterred squash vine borers by interplanting nasturtiums in the hills with her squash.
Ooh, and that's another nice edible plant as well.
And it
leaves
is.
Leaves and flowers, yeah.
It is indeed. Rachel, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. It's been fun.
Rachel Belita is the founder of Daily Harvest Design. She's a landscape designer and permaculture consultant. So great to have her with us today. I think in Garden Talk next week, we'll have Melinda Myers with us, and that'll be fun as well to talk with her. It's a great show for me to be able to do. I always enjoy hosting these shows, and a big thanks to all our people, our producers, Clara Nyper, Joel Patnaud, our technical directors, Jeff Robbins at the board today, but Lee Rayburn also takes part, of course. And our executive producer, I'm looking at through the window right now, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening and stay with us. Lots more in store right through the afternoon here on WPR News.